We will get started. So a little sharing here tonight. It's funny because when I started the preparation for this teaching, it happens every now and then where you start doing something, and as you're doing it, it called into a different area, which is kind of strange. So it was kind of cool. I'm like, all right, hey, tell me what you want, and I'll do it. I'll go where you want. So it was not what I had started or the first few hours of prep, but this is it. And this is from Max Lucado, Change Your Life by Changing Your Heart. And so what we're going to be doing tonight is we're going to be doing a little bit of a word search on heart and what it means in the Word, what it means in the Old Testament, mostly, is what we're going to be covering. And we're going to kind of go over all the aspects of it. So to start with, the Latin of that is, you heard of cardiology. This is the root word for it, cardia. The heart is the inner self that thinks, feels, and decides. Basically, it is your direction or your drive that we're looking at when we're talking about the heart. Heart appears 776 times throughout the Word. 550 of those are in the Old Testament. Okay, so it's really big in the Old Testament as we're going to go through here. And you see, here is the concordance number for this, and the word is lev, okay? And that is what we're going to be focusing most on. There's a couple scriptures we'll do, New Testament, that kind of draws some of the things together, but this is what we're going to be looking at here. So when you go on online and you're looking up the word, here's kind of how it breaks it down. And a good portion of my sharing comes from the theological word book of the Old Testament on this word, because there is a ton of data on it, which is really neat. Tons of scriptures as well, not even close to the 550, but there was still a lot of them in there. But what it's showing you is exactly like I was explaining to you. It's your drive, your direction. Can be mind, knowledge, thinking, reflection, memory, inclination, conscience. All these things are going to be referred to as the heart. The biggest thing, though, as we look at this, and it was neat because I listened to one of Chuck's teachings while we were on our trip, and as we talk about things within the Word, and how men's heart, people say, well, I think men are good. And you're like, well, you don't know the Word, because the Word says completely different. The hearts of men are evil. They're wicked. And so we have to, it's no different. I used to hear people say all the time that, you know, baby, they're so innocent. And I'm like going, yeah, but without training, they're going to grow up to be a monster. They'll absolutely be a monster. It requires a ton of training and development. And that is no different for us when we look at it for the heart, what we have to do for ourselves. So the heart, as we're looking at this, think of this, as I was going through this, I kind of thought of this as like the motor of a boat. Okay, you have a big boat and it has an engine. And the engine has to be running, and then it transfers all that energy along a long rod that goes to the propeller. And that gives direction. Without the engine, which is basically what we're kind of referring to as the heart, that's the drive, that's the motivation, that's the force, the moving force. Everything else now, it runs towards the propeller. Okay? But without a rudder as well, and we're going to kind of look at that as well when we get towards the latter part of this, it's still no direction. You know, you've heard about that where boats, sailboats especially, if they have their rudders snap off, that boat will normally capsize because they will just turn around in the wind. They can't control the direction they're going. And so the heart is an element, but it is an all-package thing. Just having a heart is not enough to have your heart in the right place. It is a whole package type of a deal. Mm-hmm. So the force, drive, will, and a desire for what is the big thing. Everybody's going to have a desire. It may be a desire to be very displeasing to Yahweh, to just live my own life, to worship my own flesh, to serve Yahweh. But everybody has a desire. Their heart is going to lead them into a direction. And what for what is what we're trying to find out. So one of the things that I find fascinating, when I go to Lowe's, there's an old farm field. I'm always looking when I'm driving around. I'm looking for places that are alternatives for me to fly out of. And so I'm looking at all these farmlands that they've kind of let go, where nobody's planted crops in years. And what happens when you drive by those? You look at it, and it's just a wreck. It's an absolute wreck. And it has to be mowed. The trees come in and start taking over everything. And so when we're looking at this, think of, you see the farmers when they till everything over, and you've got hundreds of acres, and you're looking at it, and it's actually beautiful. There's not a weed one in there when they first do this. It's beautiful. And that is how it is for us. Okay, we have the desire or we have the initiative to keep that. And now what we plant in there is what's going to be growing. If we till everything up and we come into this, it's no different from the parables of, you know, the sower. As we come into this, we have options. Do we put anything in there? Now, if we plant a little garden, we get a garden, we get everything prepped, and we haven't planted anything in there, and then we procrastinate and months go by, when we come back, do we expect to find apple trees, tomatoes growing in it, fruits growing in it, or do we expect to find thistles, all kinds of weeds? And everybody knows the answer to that. That is the same for our lives with our heart. If we are not preparing and tending to our heart daily, multiple times during the day, the weeds, the thistles, all these things come in and try to take over and squeeze out all the other things, the fruits that are there that Yahweh's trying to administer and deliver to us. And so that's a great way to think about it. Was the one study that we did that was a Christian study, and they talked about the thermodynamics of time and how nothing improves over time. As far as physical things. If you have a house, you leave it for 15 years, you board it up, when you come back, it's not going to be expanded out and have another addition to it. It's going to be broken down, you're going to have water pipe problems, you're going to have all kinds of issues. And it has to be tended to continually. And that's what we're referring to when we're talking about the heart. Has to be tended to. We have to prepare it. And if we don't do this every day, by virtue of not doing it, what's going to happen? If you are not tending to it, the poison, the weeds, the thistles are all going to come in and take over. This is out of 2 Chronicles. But he did evil in that he did not fix his heart to seek Yahweh. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about preparing. If a person's born and they do not have instruction until they get to an age where they feel their heart drive towards Yahweh, which some people will, they'll go out and discover for themselves and then they'll realize all the errors of their way. But it's an instruction that has to take place, whether it comes from the Word, whether it comes from a parent or from a mentor, it has to be coming from somewhere. Other than that, if man just were animals, there'd be no reason not to just kill somebody for what they had, take everything they had. It wouldn't make any difference. It wouldn't make any difference. And that's what we're kind of referring to. All right, let's flip over here to Genesis 6. And if somebody would read that for me. We're going to be on page 38, and it's verses 5 through 6, and then 8. We'll do 5 through 6 first.
I'll go ahead and read it.
Thank you.
Then Yahweh saw that great was the wickedness of man in the earth, and that every purpose of the devices of his heart was only wicked all the day. And it grieved Yahweh that he made man in the earth, and he took sorrow upon his heart.
That's it. And so you see here, I've marked some of these with this here, and I've added a couple things, not to add to the word, but to show where the 3820, which is this word lev, okay, which is reference of the heart. And so every purpose and devices of the heart here, down below here you see this, so Yahweh said to himself, and this is used right here as well, but it does not have heart. In his heart is what some translations will show, but 3820 is right after this. And then also, although the device of the heart of men be wicked from his youth. This is from the beginning. And so we see this here, that yes, this is something a heart has to be tended to. And if it's not tended to, it is going to go corrupt. It will absolutely do it every single time. This is also out of the theological word book. Heart, understanding, mind, also used in idioms such as to set the heart upon, meaning to think about or to want. Concrete meanings of lev refer to the internal organ and the analogous physical locations. However, in its abstract meanings, heart became the richest biblical term for the totality of man's inner and immaterial nature. And this is it. This is why it's used so many times. This is it. This is the totality. This is how a person can be measured. In biblical literature, it is the most frequently used term for man's immaterial personality functions, as well as the most inclusive term for them since, in the Bible, virtually every immaterial function of man is attributed to the heart. By far, the majority of the usage of lev refer to either the inner or immaterial nature in general, or to one of the three traditional personality functions of man, emotion, thought, or will. And so here, this is what we're going to be looking at. And we're going to go through and we're going to see some of the usages of this as we go through the theological word book. So heart expresses the totality of man's nature and character, both inner and outer. And I've got a lot of scripture, so unless I tell you to, we'll flip over to this. In 1 Kings chapter 8, and Solomon stood before the altar of Yahweh in the presence of all the congregation of Israel, and spread forth his hands towards the heavens and said, O Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, not like thee is there an Elohim in the heavens above or upon the earth beneath, keeping covenant, and has said for the servants who are walking before thee with all their heart. And this is it. You will find tons of Christians, and it's always a pressure, because you have to fight against the thing. I heard a pastor talking the other day on the radio, and he's talking about how he's swimming. He was a black pastor, and he's standing up against all this stuff. He's condemning what's taking place, and he's taking so much heat for it. And he goes, a dead fish can go downstream. He goes, that means nothing. That means absolutely nothing. He goes, it takes work to go upstream. It is tough. And he goes, but that's what it is. And his heart's in the right place. And so this is it. Whether a person is wholehearted into it, partially into it, what's the word say about being lukewarm or being on the fence? Yahweh will spit you out. Okay, so he wants all your heart. He wants you to commit. That's what he's asking for. Psalms 9, 1 through 2, to the chief musician. This is interesting. Omud Leban, that means my son. A melody of David, a praise Yahweh with all my heart. I will recount all thy wonderful doings. I will rejoice and exalt in thee. I will praise in song thy name, O Most High. Wow, what a time to be doing that. Okay, the death of a son. Okay, yeah, absolutely. And so this is what he's saying, with all my heart. David was an excellent example. David fell. David made sins, David corrected it, and David's heart was right. Okay, the plagues are sent, not just upon Pharaoh, but upon Pharaoh's heart. And so this was interesting, I don't think I'd ever really noticed this before. The plagues came, but who did they come to? Egypt. They came to Egypt, the people. I mean, the Pharaoh's, you know, he's probably got a pretty good stockpile of stuff. He's got tons of servants he's not going to go without. But he was subject to the plagues as well. But the plagues were also sent upon Pharaoh's heart. And this is here out of Exodus 9:14. For this time am I sending all my plagues unto thy heart, and amongst thy servants, and amongst thy people, to the intent thou mayest get to know that there is none like me in all the earth. Now what we're going to see through here as we go through some of these scriptures is you're going to see a transformation. For people who are wicked and have been repetitively wicked for long periods of time, what happens to them and what Yahweh does to their heart, which is completely backwards. It seems odd, but it's interesting as you go through the Word of what actually takes place with these people. And you can see it. I mean, you look at it today, and you see these people, like we were talking about before, you know, the people screaming at Rand Paul, and you're like going, what? This is so backwards. But when you know the Word and you see these things, you're like going, yeah, this is... It makes no sense. It doesn't need to make sense. These people are blind. They are scaled over their eyes. They hear nothing. They see nothing. It doesn't matter. Truth means nothing to them. The whole spectrum of emotion is attributed to the heart. Examples of positive emotions are Hannah's heart rejoiced in Samuel, as should the hearts of those who seek Yahweh. Absalom gained for himself the loyalty of the Hebrew nation by stealing their hearts. The joyful excitement from the news that Joseph was alive made Jacob's heart faint. Reception of comfort is seated in the heart as the idiom to speak of the heart for to comfort. The negative emotions here that you see from this here, from Lev. Grief is evil of the heart, sadness of the heart. David's regret or bad conscience of cutting Saul's garment is expressed as his heart struck him. Okay, you see these things. For a person, the one thing is when you see somebody who is, that has no pity on somebody or has no emotion for something that is wrong, that is blatantly against the law or non-judicial or just bad, and people will laugh. And the stuff that took place this last week where there were attacks against white people just because of the fact that they were white. And people were watching these people being beat up and laughing. There was an attempted rape in, I think it was in New York, and people were videoing it and laughing until somebody finally came in and helped try to break it up. And this is what we're seeing. The hearts of man are bad. It makes no sense. Why would you sit there? How could you stand to watch that? But the people are dark. Yahweh's regret at creating man, we've already covered that one. The broken heart accompanies being oppressed. Contempt, and envy, anger, all functions of the heart. And we're going to look at one right here. Okay, 2 Samuel 6:16. Now it so came about that when the ark of Yahweh entered the city of David, Michal, Saul's daughter, looked out through the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before Yahweh. Boy, there's a major problem there, isn't it? And what did it do? And she despised him in her heart. Okay? Is this anything new that we see out there? Here's a guy dancing before Yahweh. I'm like, well, it should be, wow, what's he so excited about? Let me go see what's going on. Did you know something that I don't? Tell me what's making you do this. What do I need to do? But instead, you see this, and yeah, we're going to see this all the time. This is it, the contempt in her heart. Idioms relating to the heart, to fear, and bravery are so numerous as to deserve separate treatment. Now again, this is all from the Theological Workbook. Fear is expressed as follows. The heart may go out or leave, fail. To remove courage is to hinder the heart. And that's a big one, okay? Because as we get farther into this, we're going to show how what comes from the heart. It's basically, if you put something, say you put a dryer sheet in something. Somebody told me about this. They put, for some reason, they were packing up food, and they put all their stuff together, and they're separating it in Ziploc bags, and then they put the dryer sheets in with all that stuff. And it was like two or three bags separated between them. And guess what happened when they got home? All the food tasted like dryer sheets and went through three heavy-duty Ziploc bags. And so this is what happened. It permeates through, and it's going to permeate. What's in your heart will permeate all the way through your tongue, through your actions, through your empathy, through every part of you. Fear occurs when the heart deserts its owner. And that's a bad one. So, yeah, you're going to see this, where people who are completely gone, what's happening? People's hearts are crushed, or people's hearts are out of whack, and now they're, what are we going to have? We're going to have all kinds of apprehension. We're going to be agitated. We're going to be fearful. All these things, almost like a cornered animal, is where you kind of see this as somebody who just doesn't know what to do. They're just jumpy. There's no peace within them. Trembling of the heart may represent emotions ranging from the complete demoralization of Yahweh's people under judgment. These are all the scriptures for it. Eli's anxiety over the welfare of the ark. So, I mean, sometimes they can be good, sometimes it can't be good. Most of the time, I'm going to say with your heart, you know, I think of Christ as a perfect example. No anxiety when he's on a ship and everybody else is freaking out. Okay, that's a pretty solid heart right there. He's in a good place. He's not worried. No big deal. No anxiety, no fear. On the other hand, the heart of a lion speaks of courage. Okay, and that's out of Samuel. Thought functions may be attributed to the heart. In such cases, it is likely to be translated as mind or understanding. So there will be times when you go through, I pulled up all of those, so in the online Bible, you can pull up the Strong's word, search it out, and I did, and I mean, it was 550 of them. And not all of them are going to show heart, because as you can see here, depending on how it's being used, mind or understanding, to set the heart to may mean to pay attention to. And that's a big one. Yeah, to be paying attention or to consider important. Creative thought is a heart function. Wicked devices originate where? Okay, and we read that. That's in Genesis 6:5 and 6:6. Also, which came upon Solomon's heart as all that Solomon had planned in 2 Chronicles. Wisdom and understanding are seated in the heart. And so this is another one. When a person is unlearned, their heart is wishy-washy. I mean, it could go either direction. Just kind of, you know, like a rubber ball bouncing around. Doesn't really have any definition to it. Understanding and wisdom are seated in the heart. The wise heart, wise mind, and wise of heart are mentioned. See this here in Proverbs, Kings. The idiom can be strongly felt that heart virtually becomes a synonym for such ideas as mind or sense. The heart functions in perception and awareness, as when Elisha's heart, okay, went to Gehazi. As the seat of thought and intellect, and the heart can be deluded. And that's it. That's a very big one. And the seat of thought and intellect. And so Yahweh's not looking for the smartest people out there. He's looking for the obedient people who have their heart right. Because what you're going to find out is you're going to find out that the top academics that are out there, They are so far out. They are so far out. They may have some knowledge up here, but that knowledge is worthless, and it's all going to burn. It's going to be of nothing. What matters is what you have in your heart. That's what Yahweh's looking for, not your intellect. And so when we see that, these people that are they're the smartest ones, yeah, these guys are the physicists, and tell you, and most of them don't even believe in Yahweh. They kind of laugh at the thought that, oh, you weak people need that. And I'm like, well, no, your heart is what sets this. Let's flip over to Isaiah 44. It's going to be on the page once you get to it.
688.
Thank you. 44. And this is going to be 17 through 20. And if somebody would help me out and read that for me, please.
Who bringeth forth chariot and horse.
Hey, one second, real quick. Let me interrupt here. We're starting off here in verse 17 of 44. Prior to this, because I'm trying to condense this, because there's a lot of slides here. We're going to be on time tonight. But what we're talking about here, to start with, is there is... We're talking about a person who has basically fallen a tree or basically getting prepared to do a meal and has all this extra stuff and branches and getting ready to cook and everything else. And then in verse 17 there on 689, please go ahead, Wendy, thank you.
And the residue thereof into an
owl
he maketh, into his carved image, adoreth it, boweth down, and prayeth unto it, and saith, deliver me, for my owl thou art. They have not taken note, neither can they perceive. He hath besmeared, past seeing their eyes, past understanding their hearts. And no one reflected, there is neither knowledge nor discernment to say, half thereof have I burned up in the fire. Moreover also I have baked on the coals thereof bread. I roasted flesh and have been eating. And of the remainder thereof an abomination shall I make? And to a log of wood shall I pay adoration? He is feeding on ashes, a deluded or mocked or deceived heart hath turned him aside, and he cannot deliver his own soul, nor say, is there not a falsehood in my right hand?
That's it. So see, here's a person who used half of their idol to cook their food and was celebrating over it, and here they are, and it says that he is feeding on his own ashes. And I'm like, well, this is perfect. And when you look on there, in verse 18, he hath besmeared, past seeing their eyes, past understanding their hearts, neither knowledge nor discernment to say. It's gone. It's gone. And so when you see this, this is what happens when the heart is hardened. When Yahweh talks about a hardened heart, this is what we're talking about exactly right here. They do not see. There is no discernment. There is not right or wrong. There is nothing. It's just emptiness, just shallow and void. And here's a guy saying, feeding on your ashes. And it's funny because some of the notes and stuff that I was reading from some of the online stuff, they're like going, yeah, it would have been better for him to just eat the whole thing. Melt the whole thing down and eat all of the ashes. You know, when you think about that, you're like, when Moses who made them eat, they were worshiping the thing and powderized it and had to take it, eat it. This is what you wanted so bad, consume it. And this is what we're talking about, the same thing. The heart, once it gets to that point, it's diluted. There's no discernment. And so if we are lacking of discernment, I'm going to check the heart and make sure I'm all good here. What's going on? And Yahweh will show us. That's a great thing. If anybody repents and falls down, I mean, look at Nebuchadnezzar, the people who did this, when they actually come down and fall down before Yahweh, Yahweh's going to listen. Yahweh will start restoring them if their heart is in a right place. The heart is the seat of the will. A decision may be described as setting the heart. Not of my heart expresses, not of my will. And see, these are all the scriptures. I don't have time to go through all of these. The hearts of the Shemites inclined to follow Abimelech. Removal of decision-making capacity is described in the hardening of the heart. And that's it. And there it is. That's in Exodus. Okay, and you see that there, that the decision-making capacity. And so why are people making such horrible decisions? It's been gone. If your heart is that hardened, you are outside of that. There is no compassion. It means nothing.
Yeah.
If you are basically an animal is what you are at that point. Closely connected to the proceeding is the heart as the seat of moral responsibility. Righteousness is integrity of heart. Moral reformation is set to one's own heart. Right. Heart aright. The heart is described as the seat of moral evil as well. You see that in Jeremiah 17:9. The heart is evil. Deceitful is the heart above all things and dangerously wayward. Who can know it? What is the heart? What is in the heart seeps out of the mouth. And let's flip over here to Matthew 12, because this is where it connects together. It's not just what that you have a malleable heart, or what the scriptures will talk about an uncircumcised heart. Okay, that you have, you're going to obey. You're going to set your own desires, secondly, to what Yahweh's called you to do. And everything else, Yahweh will put everything else in place when you do this, but it's a thing where people will be like going, sure, I believe in Yahweh, but just in case, I've got this backup plan. You know, I've got my money, I've got my food, I've got all these other things. And so that's where a lot of people will look at this, and this is what we're looking at. It will seep out, it will seep out. And when the waves come, when the storms come, those people that are not on good foundation are going to be struggling. They're going to have a hard time. So if somebody would here, I didn't want to talk through this. Somebody would go ahead and read that for me, please.
Brood of vipers, how can you speak good things being evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh.
And that's it. And so what you see of that, again, it's one of those things for me. You know, when I'm working, sometimes when I'm doing mechanical things, I get frustrated. I don't get frustrated when it comes talking to people. I have really good patience. But when I'm doing mechanical things, sometimes it will slip. And all of a sudden, I sound like the dad on... what's that where he's down there fixing the furnace? Yeah, Christmas story. And I'm like going, where the hell did that just come from? And I'm ashamed. I'm like going, I went there too quick. I got to check this and take a break and put things back off the side. But I get frustrated and now I'm anger and it manifests right out of my mouth. And then I'm like going, what the heck did I just say? What did I do that's wrong? I should not be doing this. But that's it. It's going to come out. It will come out. Matthew 15. So let me flip over to Matthew 15, 7. I'll read these ones here. Matthew 15, 7 and 8. Okay, and here we are here, eating with unwashed hands. You see that over the top of chapter 15. And this Christ, hypocrites, well prophesied concerning you, Isaiah, saying, this people with the lips do honor me, while their heart far off holdeth from me. But in vain do they pay devotions unto me. Okay, and then we're going to jump down here to 17 through 19. Kind of skip over some of this here. 17, perceive ye not that everything which entertaineth into the mouth, into the stomach, findeth way, and unto the drop, is past, while the things which proceed out of the mouth, out of the heart, come forth, and they defile the man. For out of the man come forth wicked designs, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false testimonies, profane speaking. These are the things which defile the man, but the eating with unwashed hands does not defile the man. And that's what he's talking about. He's telling that their hearts were wrong. What they cared about was the outside. What Yahweh cares about is the heart, what is on the inside. Training our heart means that we train what we speak. And this is a tough thing. Because what happens when you're in a bad position, the reason I use the scripture of David from the loss of a son, is this is hard times. You can imagine a person being broke and being rebellious, being angry with Yahweh. And yet here's David, I'll praise you with all my heart. I will walk in your ways. This is what he said. This is how he lived his life. And so for us, when these things come, if what is slipping out of our mouth is, I'm not going to have the healing. I'm not going to have this. I'm not going to get this testimony. I'm not going to... These things that have been promised to me, they're not coming. Well, guess what? You just spoke what was in your heart. It's time to change that. To remodify, remold that heart, to bring it back so the things that are coming out of them, even if I don't believe it, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. Hey, I believe this, Yahweh. Healing's coming. I haven't seen it, but this is it. And this is what we're talking about. Training ourselves and training the heart, that we are cultivating it continually. Because if those things are slipping out of our heart, it's time to reanalyze and do some weed pulling in the heart. Get rid of those things. Purge. So that what comes out, whether it's happened or not, we're believing it. We're believing this. Same way with Melania's teaching, Abraham. I fully believe Abraham was going to kill his child. I know he was. And he was going, guess what? How many people have been raised from the dead by that point? None. So this was going to be the first one. Abraham walked into that. This is the promised child. Promised child. So guess what I'm going to do? I don't know what's going to happen, but Yahweh told me to do this. I'm going to be obedient, and somehow or another, I will still have my son, because he's the promised one. And he did it. He was going to go do it. And I think to myself, that's the way to our heart and our voice and our actions all are coordinated. Okay, what are we speaking? A sepulcher opened is the throat. With their tongues have they used deceit. The poison of asp is under their lips, whose mouth of cursing and bitterness is full. That's out of Romans. Out of Luke, good man, out of good treasure of the heart bringeth forth that which is good. And the wicked man, out of the wicked heart, bringeth forth that which is wicked. For out of an overflowing heart speaketh his mouth. It will boil over whether it is good or bad, or even if it's indifferent. It's going to be that way. But if you don't tend, it's going to be wicked. In Proverbs, there is who babbleth as the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise hath healing. And that's it. That's what Yahweh wants. The healing. Speak the healing. So in the Christian world, so many Christians, oh, the healing's here. Yeah, if it's Yahweh's desire, you know, if it's Jesus' desire, you'll have it. Other than that, just keep praying. It's no big deal. And I'm like, well, that's poison. That's poison. You are chasing the faith away from these other people instead of, hey, let's read the word. Let's see what it says. Let's look at all the prophets and all the things that have happened. Let's look through history of the church and see all the things. There are healings and miracles that are taking place right now. And this is what we're seeing. When anxiety is in the heart of a man, one may boweth him down, but a good word maketh him glad. Out of the same mouth comes forth blessings and cursings. And that's exactly right. Let's flip over here to James. And we're going to be reading here. It's not going to come up on the screen here. So if somebody gets a page here, holler out for me here. Let's get close. There it is. Okay, James 3 is on page 236. Okay, if somebody would read for me, I know it's a long one, but 2 through 11, please.
For oft are we stumbling one and all. If anyone in word doth stumble, the same as a mature man, able to curb even the whole body. Now, if the horse's bits into their mouths we thrust to the end they may be yielding to us, their whole body also do we turn about. Lo, the ships also, large as they are, and by rough winds driven along, are turned about by a very small helm, whithersoever the impulse of the steerman inclineth. Also, the tongue is a little member, and yet of great things maketh boast. Lo, how small a fire kindleth, how great a force, and the tongue is a fire. As the world of unrighteousness, the tongue becometh fixed among our members, that which defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the wheel of our natural life, and is set on fire by Gehenna. For every nature, both wild beasts and of birds, both of reptiles and of things in the sea, is to be tamed, and hath been tamed by the human nature. But the tongue none of mankind can tame, a restless mischief, full of deadly poison. Therewith are we blessing our Lord and Father, and wherewith are we cursing the men who, after the likeness of Elohim, have been brought into being. Out of the same mouth cometh forth blessing and cursing. Not meet, my brethren, for these things thus to be coming to pass. That's a fountain out of the same opening, teem forth the sweet and the bitter.
That's it. That's it. So that's what it's saying. The same fountain. And think of that, the same mouth. The same mouth cannot be passing sweet and bitter.
Yeah.
Okay? You need to be doing one or the other, and that's what we're talking about. And the tongue, how the tongue, what we say, manifests from our heart. And it does the exact opposite.
Right.
Because if you keep saying the same thing over again, you know what you're doing? You're creating a belief within it. You are setting foundation in your own heart that matches what's coming out of your mouth. And so we have to check it. We have to curb what's coming out of the mouth and make sure that what's in our heart, that we're continuing it. If your heart's not there, then just be speaking the words. Doesn't matter, okay? I'll get there. But I'm going to be speaking it. And I'm going to be believing. And I'm going to be going. Is it okay? Public speaking is one of the highest rated fears that people have. And to break through that, well, if you're speaking and we're talking about using the tongue, well, for crying out loud, if you're inhibited by opening your mouth in public, then it's going to be really tough when you're in confrontation to teach somebody or show somebody something. So yeah, it's awesome with you kids doing that. It's wonderful to see that. Okay, so I think we are close to this. All right, and this here again, this is from the very first lie, but he did evil and that he did not fix. or prepare his heart to seek Yahweh. And this is it. This is where we have to daily. You know, I remember Aaron had a great analogy on that. As you know, you're walking through a field that has long grass and it has mud and stuff on it and it's collecting on you. And you daily have to purge this stuff off. And that's the world we're in. And it's not something that you do once a quarter or once a year, you know, like my shop cleaning, you know, my semi-annual shop cleaning. It's not like that. We have to do this. It's continual. And all of a sudden you'll be going somewhere and something, you know, like we were talking about today, nursery rhymes just pop into my head. I'm like, where the hell did that come from? And I don't want that in there. Some of these are morbid. And so what do I have to do? I have to purge them, go away. And this is continual. It's going to happen. So it's not a one time, my heart's prepared and I'm done. It is a cultivating, it's a garden. And that's how we have to look at it. It's a garden that continually needs stuff. In his garden, you may only weed it once a week. You try to go in and weed your heart once a week, you're going to have stuff stacking up. It has to be daily. It has to be daily. Okay, so I will go ahead and close and have a word. Yahweh, we thank you for the words you give. We thank you for the teachings, for all the resources that we have, the electronic resources, the cross-referencing, all the different translations and the works of those of your servants who went before you, Yahweh, that made us available to us, that we're able to really dive into your word and seek out things, the treasures that you have. We thank you for that, for the blessings, for us to be able to share those and pass those on to other people, and for us to continually guard our hearts and check ourselves that we may be able to, what is released from our mouth is matched with what is in our heart, and that these things are well-pleasing to you, and that we are walking in the way of you, and that we are empowered through your Son. We thank you, Christ, for the price you paid, that we may have that authority of your name and be seated with you. And we thank you for this, for the words you give, and we speak this all through your Son's name, Christ Jesus. Know that this day and on the morrow, that the things that are coming, for I have seen these things and I know what is before you, and do not be shaken by anything that you are seeing, because of this world there will be many things that will shake and scatter people and make people fear and lose their faith upon me. But do not do this, for I have seen these things and I have guarded and I have watched over and I have placed you in position that you are in a time and a position that I will be able to use you, be calling upon me. That is, if you are doing this daily, there's many tasks. And if you call upon me, that I will absolutely administer these things out to you and show you the things and embolden you, and you will be building great fruit in your next kingdom. Amen. All right.